Hi, I'm Nathan Weinbender, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that recognizes talent when we see it, which is how we got on the Adam Driver bandwagon so early. We've talked about him a lot on this program, from his scene-stealing breakout role on the HBO series Girls to the low-key charms of his work in Jim Jarmusch's Patterson. And the actor is at the center of both films we'll be discussing today. And no, neither of them involve lightsaber duels in a galaxy far, far away, though stay tuned next week for that. Instead, we'll be digging into Netflix's Marriage Story, which recently earned Driver Golden Globe and SAG Award nominations and has inspired plenty of internet debate and memes. And then we'll chat about Amazon Prime's The Report, the true story of a CIA cover-up and the whistleblower who brought it to light. We'll start, though, with some domestic discord. Despite its title, Marriage Story begins with a divorce. The couple that's breaking up is Charlie, played by Adam Driver, and Nicole, played by Scarlett Johansson. He's an acclaimed director of avant-garde theater in New York. She's a film-turned-stage actress and one of his primary collaborators. We get the sense that they've been drifting apart for a while. He had a brief affair with his stage manager, and she's moving to L.A. to star in a new TV series, leaving Charlie behind to oversee a new Broadway production. Their 8-year-old son Henry, meanwhile, is stuck in between. What follows is a drama that says much about these two people, their desires and hang-ups as individuals, and their shortcomings as a couple, as it is the legal minutiae of divorce, with our characters spending more and more time in antiseptic meeting rooms and crowded courthouses. Marriage Story was written and directed by Noah Baumbach, whose films are both drawn to and repelled by prickly, difficult artist types. And like his 2005 breakout, The Squid and the Whale, this is a semi-autobiographical, lived-in portrait of a boho New York family coming apart at the seams. It's also reminiscent of 1979's Kramer vs. Kramer and how it deals with the complications and contradictions of the divorce process and of James L. Brooks's bittersweet Terms of Endearment, which similarly observes how absurdity and tragedy often coexist in real life. Driver's and Johansson's performances are rightly being singled out for praise, and I suppose we'll talk about their now-famous fight scene in a minute. But what makes this such a rich film is its cast of memorable tertiary characters, Laura Dern, Ray Liotta, and Alan Alda as divorce attorneys of various cutthroatness, Julie Haggerty as Nicole's mother and Merritt Weaver as her sister, who've become Charlie's surrogate family, and all the eccentric actors in Charlie's theater troupe. Now, some viewers have been arguing about whose side, Charlie's or Nicole's, they and the film come down on, but I think such debate requires you to look right past the beating heart of this complicated humanist movie and consider it as warfare. I don't think Baumbach is concerned about who's right and who's wrong, but rather about how the people who love you most are also capable of hurting you most deeply, and how some couples are better when they're not together. In that sense, he finds hope in a bleak situation.
You know, as you point out, Nathan, this is hardly the first movie about a divorce or breakups. There's been many of them. Woody Allen almost made a career with Manhattan, Annie Hall.
Husbands and Wives.
Yes, exactly. But the one that as you correctly point out, that this is most comparable to is Robert Benton's 1979 film, Kramer versus Kramer. The difference here, I think, though, is that maybe for the first time, the woman in the relationship is given near equal weight. I'm not going to say that Scarlett Johansson's character is given totally equal weight, because anyone who has seen the film, one of the main memories you're going to take away is Adam Driver singing the song from Company.
Being human.
Being alive.
Or being alive, right.
Right, exactly. Kramer versus Kramer was almost all about Dustin Hoffman's character and his relationship with his son, although
Meryl Streep,
she won an Academy Award.
Her first, they both did.
But she won Best Supporting Actress. Right. She's barely in the movie at all. I mean, she's very effective.
It truly is a supporting performance. Precisely.
So that's one of the big differences. And the other thing that I think that is impressive, and we'll get to acting in a second because I think it's superb across the board, and you mentioned pretty much everybody that deserves mentioning, is this shows how mature Noah Baumbach has become as a director. I loved his first film, Kicking and Screaming. From then on, I've loved certain parts of his films, but for the most part, the ones that I haven't liked are he takes characters who are unlikable and makes movies around them. Margot at the Wedding. Nicole Kidman was a superb performance. But how could you like her?
Or anybody in that movie, honestly.
Exactly. Or Greenberg. I mean, Ben Stiller's character was horrendous. He was just anathema.
Yeah. And I think that one of the problems that Baumbach has had, and certainly problems I've had with some of his films, but not with Marriage Story, is the glibness with which he approaches some of these characters. You do get the sense in his worst films that there is kind of an air of condescension, that he's only writing these characters so that he can kind of look down his nose at them. And I don't feel that way about this movie.
When they're entertaining and well-drawn. But this is a fully adult look at the breakup of a marriage. And it doesn't point fingers in the sense that he's right, she's wrong, she's right, he's wrong, whatever. As the only one in among us three who has been involved in a divorce, I think that it gives full weight to the process itself, which is it can be loving, it can be destructive, it can be utterly painful to all parties involved.
And contradictory in a lot of ways.
Exactly, including the child. Mm-hmm. And the thing I really like most about the film is how it ends on a sense of life does go on. That, yeah, it's tough, it's horrible, but if you're adult enough about it, if you work hard enough at it, you can overcome. And everyone can come out sadder and hopefully a bit wiser.
Dan, you're correct that neither Nathan nor I has been involved directly in a divorce, but I did practice family law and clerk in the family court, so I have extensive experience. Well, some experience for sure, dealing with the whole dissolution of a marriage process. And I have to say, this film stops just short of being completely stereotypical in terms of the lawyer portrayals. Ray Liotta's pretty much over the top, but there are those types of family lawyers. Laura Dern plays a really interesting character. Because
and supposedly based on her own divorce attorney Scarlett Johansson used.
Right, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then we have Alan Alda, who sort of stumbles into being a family lawyer after another career on the bench and so forth, who's trying to play more of a collaborative lawyering role. And so I thought those portrayals were really well done. And Dan, you're right, the behind-the-scenes look, the poor little kid, and you know how he really has love and affection for his entire family, both parents as well as his extended family. You know, he's been moved 3,000 miles away from his New York home, as Adam Driver keeps emphasizing throughout this film. I thought this was really one of the best possible looks at divorce situation. I wasn't completely taken with Julie Haggerty, but everyone else in the film is superior. And I'm really happy to see Merritt Weaver show up. We talked about her performance in the miniseries with Toni Collette titled Unbelievable. I hope we see more of her.
Her character here is 180 degrees different from was in that miniseries.
Well, and in talking about Marriage Story, I do want to kind of discuss the juggling of tones that's happening here, because our conversation here has leaned towards the divorce part of the film. But there are these sequences within it that are just masterfully made by Baumbach and his actors that are funny, farcical in certain situations. There's a whole sequence involving the serving of the divorce papers that plays out as this kind of mini playlet farce in a way. And it makes sense that he would take that approach, because these are people that come out of theater. And there are sequences in this movie that play like theater. This long monologue that Scarlett Johansson has that's in one long unbroken take, where she talks about falling in love with Charlie, not to mention the opening montages,
yes,
which are just so wonderfully done with Randy Newman's music. It's just beautiful. But of course, the big centerpiece of Marriage Story is that fight sequence, which happens about 90 or 100 minutes into this 2-hour, 15-minute film. And it's been memed all over the internet. It's been picked apart by people who haven't seen that scene within the context of the film and are judging it as this kind of adrift piece of theater. And I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. I thought that scene – I mean, after 100 minutes of this pot that's about to boil over, it finally does – And we watch these two people who once loved each other and maybe still do, trying desperately to hurt the other person, to say the cruelest possible thing. And one of them goes way too far and is then comforted by the other person.
Yeah.
And there's something in that moment that is – it's messy and it's contradictory, but it makes absolute sense. And it shows you in just a matter of moments exactly the dynamic of that relationship.
It's a microcosm of the entire relationship.
And those two performances, I mean, they're just great.
Yeah. And to be able to capture that in a film setting is –
and not make it seem heavy-handed, not make it seem too actorly.
And the only thing I want to point out about that specific scene is that when you say that it boils over, there's a potential for violence in that scene.
There is violence, but it's not
the kind of violence against each other. Scarlett Johansson, as the woman character, who's a lot smaller than Adam Driver in that scene, holds her own throughout. And it's just a wonderfully done scene that's both painful and, as you point out, comforting, ironically, at the same time.
And you wonder if Baumbach was calling on his own relationship breakup to add some real-life scenarios.
With Jennifer Jason Leigh, who was a collaborator with him previously.
Yes.
So there are lots of real-world parallels in this movie, but I think if you can look past all of the memeable stuff that's been going on and all of the internet discourse, I think we all agree that Marriage Story is one of the best movies.
This will be on
my
top 10.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's on Netflix right now, so you can see it. And again, that was Marriage Story, and this is Movies 101. And with that, it's time for us to take a break. Before we go, let me remind you that you can listen to past episodes of the show, as well as the regular reviews that Dan and I write at SpokanePublicRadio.org. When we're back, we'll be discussing the fact-based procedural, The Report. You're listening to Spokane Public Radio.
This is Gabe.
Hi.
Earlier this year, Gabe was browsing a popular social media site when a joke somebody posted about donating to public radio caught his eye.
Later down in the comments, I saw that he said that he would donate, but he can't really afford to.
So Gabe committed an act of public radio kindness.
And I was like, I will donate for you. How much and which station? I guess that was my way of just paying for his experience of NPR.
Hey y'all, Sam Sanders here from NPR. Acts of public radio kindness happen every day. When you donate to this public radio station, your support goes straight to the stories we tell and the people who tell them. You are committing an act of public radio kindness for everyone who listens, whether you're neighbors or complete strangers. So give right now to keep news, information, and kindness flowing.
Please make your year-end contribution today at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Nathan Weinbender. During the first half of the show, Dan Webster, Mary Pat Truthart, and I reviewed Marriage Story. While that considered the ins and outs of divorce proceedings, our next film does the same with real-life espionage. It's called The Report, and it stars Adam Driver, again, but this time as a real guy named Daniel Jones, who uncovered a serious ethics violation while working as an aide for California Senator Dianne Feinstein. The movie is something of a procedural, beginning when Jones started his career as an idealistic government employee in 2003, and follows along with him as that idealism is dashed. His desire to hold the government accountable remains unswayed, however, and as an agent for the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, Jones discovered that in the aftermath of the September 11th attacks, the FBI and CIA okayed the use of torture methods, or in their preferred parlance, enhanced interrogation techniques, on supposed Al-Qaeda members. These techniques, which included waterboarding, sensory deprivation, and even simulated burials, were known to be ultimately ineffective, but were nonetheless used on hundreds of detainees. Jones and a team of investigators outlined their findings in a nearly 7,000-page document, which definitively proved that the government had illegally attempted to cover its tracks, but the powers that be attempted to quash its release for years. The report, its on-screen title, it should be noted, is The Torture Report, but the torture part is redacted, was written and directed by Scott Z. Burns, a regular collaborator of Steven Soderbergh, who gets a producer's credit this time. It's well made, to be sure, and features a stable of reliable character actors: John Hamm, Ted Levine, Michael C. Hall, Maura Tierney, Douglas Hodge, Corey Stoll, and Annette Bening as Feinstein. It's in the tradition of journalistic and governmental procedurals like The Insider or All the President's Men, structured as a long series of meetings and depositions and covert conversations in shadowy parking lots. But no human characters emerge from it. It's covering an important subject, but the treatment here is almost too rigid to really capture the aggression and anger that reverberated through our country in the aftermath of 9/11. What we get here is a report rather than a compelling drama.
Nathan, that's a really interesting take on what transpires here, because I largely agree with you that there's something missing at the core of this film, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
A human being, maybe?
Well,
a believable character?
Especially because the Adam Driver character goes on to become, you know, a pretty notable human rights advocate, and that sort of piece of the story is kind of missing because we're focused on other things. You didn't mention the film to which this bears the greatest resemblance, in my opinion, and it's a film we did not review on the show, but it's Official Secrets with Keira Knightley, which came out a few months ago. And the parallels between these two are startlingly similar, hence the use of the word parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So that film focused on the run-up to the Iraq War in 2003, and she is someone who's working for British intelligence and gets information that maybe the weapons of mass destruction claim is not completely accurate. And as a result, it appears as though the Brits were somewhat bamboozled by their American counterparts in terms of what the truth might actually be. So she plays a whistleblower role here, involves a journalist played by Matt Smith. So again, I think part of the problem here is, to me, this film felt derivative in some ways. And it also resembles Homeland, the ongoing series that we have had the opportunity to talk about in passing at various points. Because, again, that's a film about the CIA and about the behind-the-scenes look at the CIA.
And there's a lot of spotlight DNA in this movie, too. I mean, just the whole idea that it's less focused on the people at the center, which is my main criticism of the report. But Spotlight was also a film that was about the procedure. It was about the journalism. It wasn't about the personal lives of the characters. And All the President's Men is the same way. But in those movies, I got the sense that I was watching real people doing their jobs. And here I got the sense that it was a screenplay trying to give me like a Wikipedia summary of a really complex thing that happened. I don't know.
7,000 pages is hard to reduce.
I suppose
2 hours
that's true,
film.
But you could have made it into a more compelling human drama than what we get here, I feel.
Although
like.
I have to say, I really did appreciate Annette Bening as Dianne Feinstein, because she sort of adopts some of the persona of Dianne Feinstein without sort of taking over and channeling the character
it's good casting,
directly.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. I think the film worked better for me than it did for either of you. I didn't see Official Secrets, so I can't compare the two. I'm not going to quibble with either, particularly your Nathan's. How the film doesn't work for you. But I would suggest also that one main problem with the report is that, especially in comparing it to All the President's Men, is when All the President's Men came out, we were still, I think, a lot more innocent of a culture in terms of government misdeeds and, you know, the very notion of truth. I think 40 years, 50 years later, we are jaded and cynical. And so consequently, when we see a movie that talks about, oh, my gosh, the CIA did something wrong. Oh, really? I mean,
that's a good point.
Yeah. So I think that that's part of the problem here and why it doesn't have the impact that, say, All the President's Men might have had. Also, it doesn't have Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. But that's a whole nother thing. I think another problem with this film is that at times when it does try to maybe humanize something, it does it in a way in which you and I were just talking about. The two characters, who are the Seer guys, the two
Bruce
psychologists?
Bruce Jessen and James Mitchell,
right.
Who
those
have a
guys
Spokane
who
connection.
Have, right, who have the Spokane connection. They're viewed almost like snidely whiplashes in this movie, as almost they're twirling their mustaches. And, you know, I don't know that that's fair to these men. I don't know that there's any way you could make an argument that the work they did was good. And
three of the detainees did bring a federal lawsuit in the Eastern District of Washington, which was settled. So we don't really know what transpired.
But, I mean, the movie goes out of its way to make these guys into bad guys into villains, and I'm not sure that that was necessary. Just showing what they did is bad enough. the final point I want to make is, you both have talked about how terrific Adam Driver is. I mean, this whole program is about Adam Driver. And Annette Bening is terrific. The one scene that I really liked, and it's just a throwaway scene, is almost at the beginning of the film. It's when Driver, early in his career as Dan Jones, interviews with John Hamm, and he comes in all full of vim and vigor, and it's the look on his face when Hamm turns him down and says, dude, yeah, you've done all these things, but you need to get some real-life experience. His face changes just so slightly, but it's enough you see... Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought I had this.
And
that this guy is such a unique actor. And 20 years ago, he would not have been a star.
No,
but
he is today.
I
agree with you. And I think that if there is a strong element in the report, it is Adam Driver, even if he does kind of remain a cipher for a lot of it, which I think is a deliberate choice on Burns's part, because we see that this has completely consumed his life.
And I think that's probably realistic.
But we also don't
know
what his life is outside, because
right.
we only see him at work, which again is not inherently a problem, but I think it is here. There, I also didn't get the sense of disillusionment that the movie really wanted me to feel, because I think it is at such an emotional remove from everything. But there was one great line, and I think Feinstein says it to the Adam Driver character, Dan Jones. She says, they put you in a ship. They built a ship for you that they never intended to sail.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of sums up what this movie is trying to do. I just think maybe it needed just a little more punch, a little something. I mean, maybe we are kind of contradicting ourselves by saying that the villains in this movie are drawn too broadly, whereas the rest of the movie maybe isn't drawn broadly enough. But this just didn't click with me. It was kind of dry and dull. But they're talking about really serious,
and they have some
stuff.
Footage that is shocking.
Yeah, yes. No, it's yeah. a tough film in a lot of places, and it's streaming on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it and make up your mind for yourself.
And we should also point out that this full report still has not been released.
Exactly.
And
it's
maybe never
still
will
heavily
be.
Redacted, right. And that was The Report, starring Adam Driver, and this is Movies 101, where earlier we discussed Marriage Story, also starring Adam Driver. As with every week, I'd like to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to hear our musings. We'll be back again next week to take on more Christmas time releases, but until then, let me leave you with the lyrics from Stephen Sondheim's Being Alive, which features prominently in one of this week's films. Make me confused, mock me with praise, let me be used, vary my days, but alone is alone, not alive. You're listening to Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.